The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
This is The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. I'm Vivian Glass. We're celebrating World Piano Day, which takes place on the 88th day of the year in honour of the 88 keys of a piano. And this year it falls on the 29th of March. We've got three brilliant guests to talk about piano lessons, how to choose a piano, and even street pianos. The pianos you might have seen in public places, like train stations. Welcome to the show. Joining us now on The Parents Show for World Piano Day is Harpenden-based Katie Fenner, owner of Musical, a complete centre for music making. Katie, thank you so much for joining us today on Mix 92.6 on The Parents Show. We're absolutely thrilled to have you with us.
Thanks very much, Vivian. I'm really pleased to be here.
Katie, I'd love it if you could just tell us a little bit about yourself, first of all, and how you became involved in Musical.
Absolutely. So Musical has been going since 1977, so before I was even born. And my childhood started revolving around Musical when I was about 12, and I was lucky enough to go on one of their summer courses. They used to run them all over the country back in the day when there weren't lots and lots of summer holiday courses happening. And it happened at my school, which was down in Kent, and I just absolutely fell in love with playing in an orchestra, playing in bands, just being thoroughly immersed in music for a whole week. And that first holiday course basically changed the trajectory of my life. Up until then, I'd been umming and ahhing whether it was ballet or music, and that absolutely decided for me that it was going to be music for the rest of my life. The following year, I got a place in the National Youth Orchestra of Great Britain and was privileged enough to play in the greatest youth orchestra in the world and met 160 other teenagers who felt the same, who were as passionate about music. Most have gone into the music world and gone into incredible international orchestras, you know, London Symphony Orchestra, Royal Philharmonic, orchestras all over the world. And so sort of my friendship base suddenly became international. Not that I knew it then, but I certainly know it now. And some of the children that I met, well, there were lots of siblings involved, and the Johnstons were three brothers that I met in the National Youth Orchestra, and their parents, Jill and Dave, were the founders of Musical, which I didn't know at the time. And having gone on their courses every summer, I suddenly became very interested, and I started tutoring on their courses. And then sort of the way the world works, we ended up, after I went to the Royal Academy of Music, I actually went into a classical crossover band, which was a very fun time, I think, of my life. We got to tour the world, we recorded an album, got signed to EMI, just generally had a brilliant few years. And during that time, I was speaking with Jill and Dave on one of the summer holiday courses, and not quite sure how it happened, but we ended up renting Jill's mother's house in Harpenden, as my husband and I wanted to move out of London. So my journey was very sort of synonymous with Musical and everything that it offered. After my first child, I started teaching at Musical. So I'd done the summer courses. I'd tutored on the summer courses. I was now tutoring at the main music centre. And then Jill and Dave decided that it was time to retire. They'd been doing it for nearly 40 years. It was their baby, their passion that I could see needed someone to take it on that was just as passionate about music education and wanted it to continue for as many years to come as possible. And it just so happened that my youngest child was going off to full-time school and at the time that they wanted to retire. So it all kind of fell into place quite naturally, really. And it's been wonderful. It's been a journey, I would say, going from sort of violin tutor to running a music school. It's a bit of a leap, particularly as we took over right in the middle of COVID in August 2020. So there was an awful lot to learn very, very quickly. But we're nearly 5 years in and it's been wonderful. We're growing and we're reaching hundreds of children every year. I think it's over 1,000 local children we get to teach and go into schools and private lessons. And yeah, it's an absolute joy.
Oh, fantastic. So was that your instrument, Katie? Did you start off in violin?
I did, yes. So I begged my parents to start the piano when I was about 4. And they were both tone deaf. So we were a bit sort of, they were a little unsure as to whether this was something they really wanted to pursue. And then when I was 7, I think our school were doing free trials for half a term or something to encourage some violin playing. And they thought, great, half a term, she'll be done in 5 weeks and she'll move on with her ballet and dancing. And I absolutely fell in love with it. So I started the piano at 7. And then a couple of years later, they realized that actually I was really being serious about it. And I was practicing and working hard at it. And I absolutely loved it. So I started piano at 9. Yeah.
Fantastic. So tell us a little bit about who Musical is for.
Well, so we're based in Harpenden, as you said, and we teach literally anybody who wants to learn. We start at 4 years old and we have a little mini musicians course called Roundabouts, and it's a 3-year course, so 4 to 7 year olds, and the 4 to 5 year olds start on percussion. They learn about pitch and rhythm and get introduced to music in group sessions, so it's not too overwhelming, and they get to try a few instruments and through games and songs and activities. So it's all very gentle to start with. Then the 5 to 6 year olds go on and have a try on the recorder, and again there's still lots of activities and sort of general music making. And then the 6 to 7 year olds go on to the violin. So by the time they finish the course, they've had an introduction to lots of instruments, to woodwind, to strings. And then we encourage them to come along to an instrument demonstration where they get to try all of the instruments that we offer at Musical, which are generally the orchestra instruments, as well as piano, singing, guitar, and drums. Now, these instrument demonstrations, I absolutely love. I love hosting them. We encourage all the parents and the carers who come with their children that this is not just for the children. And we actually get them trying all the instruments as well. And I think my favorite story is the one where a grandfather was paying for his granddaughter to have cello lessons. And after about a term or so of her learning, he was so excited about learning the cello himself. He wanted to be able to play duets with his granddaughter. So I think he became our eldest student at the time when he was 82. And we have since had older people come along and are just wonderful. So we literally cater for 4 to 94 year olds, and we are happy to teach anybody, depending on their style, what they want to achieve. We have a lot of people that come that just want half an hour's break from sort of reality. They want to get lost in the music. They want to be educated and learn sort of about the general musicianship, not just about the instruments. So yeah, so it's a space where people can really let their hair down and be who they want to be during the week. And obviously, if they get time to practice as well, that's great.
And you're quite unusual, I think, Katie, in that Musical's really like a one-stop centre, isn't it? I mean, when you describe it as a centre, it really is. You've got your own building, you've got your own car park, which I know is obviously
premium in Harpenden.
Well, premium in Harpenden, absolutely. But tell us a little bit about, you know, how is the music room set out and what would people expect when they come in? What's the sort of day like, really, for you in Musical?
Okay, so we mostly start at 9 a.m. in the morning. We are based next to a secondary school in Harpenden. We do the peripatetic teaching for them. So students will start arriving sometimes from 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning. And we have, I want to say, 15 teaching rooms in the building itself. 3 of them are in our studios outside. So during the school day, we do peripatetic teaching for the secondary school and for our adults and any homeschooled children, home educated learners. And so they come generally during the day before 3 p.m. After that time, we are then open to all the local children and school children that want to come from about 3:30. I'd say our last lessons are about 8 o'clock. So we cover as many people as possible, and we try and adapt and work with people to get the best possible times. End of term's always fun because children move up their swim class and then we all have to rearrange, and you know, that's fine. We work with everybody and we try and be as amenable as possible. So you'll come into the building, sign in, you find your name on the list, and you go to your tutor, and you have the same tutor all the time. So you get real continuity, you get to build up a rapport with your tutor. I would say our music tutors are really, really important people in people's lives, because they're the one person that they see regularly. We find that the relationships that people build with their tutors are very special. They're the person that gets to know them. You know, they'll walk in the room and they'll say, "Oh, everything all right today? You know, you don't seem your jolly self." And it's almost like therapy, really. I think a lot of people come just to have that person to do something, to create music with, is a very special thing. It's quite a soulful thing for most people that do it. So we're in a really privileged position. And then evenings also contain lots of ensembles. We do lots of ensemble playing. We encourage all of our students, doesn't matter how old, there's something for everybody. We've got orchestras and wind bands, and we've got adult wind band. We've got beginner string groups, beginner wind bands, where they can all come as soon as they can read a few notes. And that is where the fun begins. And as soon as you start making music sociable, it opens so many doors for the children who maybe might not be as confident at school. They suddenly become part of a team. So they get that sort of reassurance from their teammates that they're really good at something. And we've seen music really change so many lives. It's a real privilege to be able to offer that. We have the opportunity to rent instruments from us. We do instrument rentals. So we try and create the whole package for people. So when they do come in and they've chosen their instrument in the instrument demo, or the instrument actually has chosen them, because it's very Harry Potter-esque in that you walk into the wand shop and the wand will come to you. And we really do find that in the demos, that they'll play a few of the instruments and suddenly it will be like, "Oh, this one, it's this one, I found it." And not to stereotype, but you can generally note a person's characteristic will match their instrument. So I should probably talk about my own children rather than others, but my second child is quite energetic and lively, and the trumpet basically jumped out at him, and he is definitely a trumpeter. He loves the loud, the excitement, the sort of, you know, the joy that that brings. Whereas my third son is much quieter, much more sensible. And he started on the violin, but actually the viola is perfect for him. It's that little bit more mellow. It's a really beautiful instrument. And yes, that really spoke to him. So we've got a whole selection in our house. My youngest is clarinet, and my eldest started on the cello, but is now all about electric guitar, bass guitar, and basically anything loud and sort of fun.
You must have such a fun household, Katie. I can only imagine that after a day from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. that all you want to do is come home and listen to Laura. I'm slightly concerned. I played saxophone. I'm not sure what that says about me.
Oh, amazing.
But you know, it's lovely to hear. And we're talking about, you know, World Piano Day today.
Yes.
Why do you think piano is considered this foundational instrument in music? Why is that so significant for those that continue their paths through a music career, perhaps?
Yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it? That I think a lot of people consider the piano to be sort of the introductory instrument to music, which I think if anyone's ever tried to learn the piano will realise very, very quickly that actually it's really complicated. So we do actually try and encourage our younger students to learn something that, A, you only need one clef to read. So music is split into treble and bass clef. And on the piano, that effectively means your right hand and your left hand. So you're learning two hands at once, reading two lines of music, and then having to put your feet in on the pedals as well. So it's actually one of the most complicated to get your head around to start with. But I think because of that, and because of that sort of the complicated setup, you're learning a new language, you're learning how to feel the music. you know, it really does cover an awful lot of all of music in terms of once you've learnt the right hand, you can then read music for all the instruments, such as the woodwind and the string instruments. Your left hand, you've then got all the bass instruments. You've got the sort of trombones and cellos. So you are covering an awful lot of instruments if you've got the basics of the piano. And I think it's such a solid instrument. It's so comforting. Once you really do get over the sort of the initial learning, it can create so much diversity in the music world. You know, there is so much music out there for piano, and it gives you the stability. Obviously, you don't have to tune it when you're playing. It's there. So I would say most musicians, if not all, I know we certainly had to, I know they don't have to anymore, but when we went to music college, you had to be able to play the piano up to sort of post-grade 8 diploma standard. And that was really just to give you the confidence to sit down at the piano, to be able to hear what it is that you're learning on your second instrument, or your first instrument, I should say. And it has that grounding. It covers sort of all bases. And there is the variation of music that you can get on it. You know, you can get these huge piano concertos, and then, you know, all these wonderful sort of just little, I don't know, composers seem to just sit there and just go, oh, I think I'm just going to write this little nugget for the piano today. And then all of a sudden it's become the biggest thing ever. You know, Mozart sitting there at 5 years old composing Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. And it's, you know, gone on for generations. And, you know, I think it's just part of so many people's lives. We certainly found during COVID, everyone seemed to have, lots of people had access to keyboards or pianos, or, you know, could find some access to one. And they came after COVID saying, please can I have piano lessons. I've tried to teach myself during COVID and I've kind of got this far and that's it. And I now really, really want to be able to play. So we had lots of pianos, guitars, a couple of saxophones, actually. There's a surprising amount of saxophones in lofts and attics and basements. But yeah, the piano, I think, is just accessible listening to audiences that maybe wouldn't be able to access music otherwise.
And what you mentioned there, you know, it is obviously complicated. What's the perfect age? Is there a perfect age to start piano?
I wouldn't say there's a perfect age. We encourage people onto individual instruments around 7, because any time before that, I think especially with piano, their fingers are so tiny, they just can't stretch, they can't reach. And then it's frustrating. And what we really encourage at Musicale is that music is to be enjoyed. It's a joyful thing. It's supposed to be something that you go on a journey for your entire life with music. It's not something that you sort of just tick off the grades and then go, right, now I can play that instrument. It really is a journey that you're going on. And I think if you start that journey too young in the sort of more structured way, you're going to kill off the joy that you can get if you waited just a little bit longer. Hence the reasons we do the sort of general musicianship classes. We want them to love music. We want them to listen to symphonies or little excerpts from symphonies and go, oh, I recognize that. That was from Swan Lake. And, you know, oh, I've heard that before. That was the Carnival of the Animals. And that's the elephant. And, you know, that's the elephant. And I can tell you all the instruments that sound like an elephant, you know. So you want to encourage that sort of the joy of music before trying to stretch your fingers so far that they won't reach, and then you get really cross and then you slam the piano lid down and you never want to play it ever again. So personally, I'd recommend 7+ and possibly even 8. And I know we have lots of people that say, oh, I'm too old, I'll never be able to do it. We have one of our piano tutors didn't start the piano till he was 14. And by the time he was 18, he had, I think, 3 diplomas in it. You know, it's, if you want to learn and you're passionate about something and you put the time and effort in, music very much is 5% talent, 95% working at it. So it's available to everybody.
Katie, you're inspiring me to go and dust off my saxophone from the loft.
Good.
You're right. It's a joy. It's such a beautiful thing to participate in. And it's very much something, you know, I recall having very happy memories of my lessons and of enjoying that and that sociable aspect. You mentioned the roundabout. When does that take place?
So Roundabouts is on Tuesday evenings after school and Saturday mornings, with the hope that if you can't come Tuesdays, then you can come Saturdays. It's run by a wonderful lady called Amanda, who has been doing it for years. She's very experienced in teaching little ones. And she also works on our summer courses and runs the Step Up to Music courses, which is the 5 to 7 year olds, where they do, it's really an extension of the Roundabouts. They do lots of fun things. They have a theme and then they learn songs and do lots of activities. And again, it's that encouraging the, you know, music is fun. It's supposed to be enjoyed and hopefully, you know, you'll get pleasure out of it.
And when does, if our listeners want to come along, want to have their child perhaps take part in one of your summer courses or have a little taster session, how could they go about doing that? What are the dates and how could they get in touch?
So the best thing to do is to go onto our website, which is musical.co.uk, which is musical with an E on the end, .co.uk. Or you can always, we've got Facebook, which is Musical UK, and Instagram as well, which is at Musical UK. And that gives all the dates about our instrument demos, our summer courses. You can fill in online forms for renting instruments, for taking part in the ensembles. All the information is on our website. So that's probably the first place you should head to. And then obviously, you know, if you've got questions, let us know, give us a call. Our number's on the website. We absolutely love chatting. And, you know, if you want to come in and just have a chat with us at front desk, we are more than happy to have a chat. So yes, we encourage everybody to have a go. And the summer courses are for 5 to 18 year olds. They take place from the 28th of July for 2 weeks. So you sign up for a week at a time. And then at the end of the week, you do a big concert where you show your families what you've been doing for the week. And every single year, I've been doing them for, oh my gosh, 25 years, I think, tutoring on them. Obviously, I was on them myself. So I don't even want to think how long that's been. But every year, I find it incredible that they turn up on Monday morning, having never seen any of the music. And by Friday evening, they are producing an hour and a half concert of just wonderful, wonderful music. So yes, I think if you feel like you want to take your music to the next level, doing a summer course really, really does do that in 5 days. It's quite remarkable.
Oh, it sounds fantastic, Katie. Thank you so much for telling us all about Musical. You mentioned it's next to one of the secondary schools. Can you tell us, do all of these events take place at your centre and where is your centre?
Ah, right. So yes, we are based in Harpenden. We're next to St. George's School in Harpenden. We're the white building with the blue windows, and all of our ensembles and our teaching takes place in our building. Apart from the local primary schools, where our tutors go out to the local primary schools and teach in the schools. Our summer courses this summer are taking place at Catherine Warrington School, which is also in Harpenden, just down the road, about 5 minutes away. And yes, we reach out to an awful lot of places. We go as far as Letchworth at the moment. Our drum tutor goes up there. So yes, if you're a school or a centre that would like some more musical involvement, definitely get in touch. We would love to provide as much music in as many places as possible. We love setting up music ensembles. We did one recently at Beach Hyde School in Wheathampstead, where they've got an electric drum kit, electric guitars, recorders, saxophones, clarinets, all sorts of things, a violin, and a very eclectic mix of students, and they are going all guns, doing wonderful, wonderful things. So we love setting up things like that.
Oh, what a lot of fun. Sounds amazing, Katie. Thank you for sharing your story about how you came into music and your journey on that, and then what a beautiful way to round that off with this offer and to bring that to children and to the community and to schools. It's just really fantastic to learn more about it. So thank you so much for sharing that with our listeners and for joining us celebrating World Piano Day. Thank you so much, Katie. Oh,
thank you, Vivian. It's been lots of fun.
We'll take a quick break now on The Parents Show on Mix 92.6.
The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors, award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
So welcome back to The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. It's great to have you with us again.
I'm Vivian Glass, and joining me to share his expertise in the piano world is Rupert Frost, the owner of Richard Reason Pianos in Hitchin. Welcome to the show, Rupert. We're delighted to have you join us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for asking.
Rupert, we've been talking about World Piano Day. It takes place on the 88th day of the year to celebrate the 88 keys on the piano, and this year falls on the 29th of March. And as part of that, we're thinking about all things piano. And I'm sure you've had customers coming in, maybe parents who might be a little bit hesitant about buying a piano for their child or looking at the costs that might be involved in that, tuning and servicing and so on. Can you tell us a little bit more about Richard Reason and a little bit about the options that you might discuss with parents when they're starting that journey?
Of course. Yeah, it is very confusing because a piano isn't something people will buy very often in their lives. Quite often, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And quite often, the person buying the piano is not the person who's going to be playing it. Quite often, it's a parent buying for a child. And if the parent knows nothing about them, then frankly, it is a scary prospect to go into a piano shop and ask for advice. Now, pianos are complicated as well, because you see them advertised all over the place, anything from thousands and thousands of pounds to being given away for free. And the outside of the piano can look much the same for a free piano as it can do for a £10,000 piano. And obviously there are huge differences, but unless you start asking and start looking, you're not going to learn them. So what we try and do here at Richard Reason Pianos in Hitchin is to try and provide that information for anyone who will be brave enough to walk through the door, and we can show them all the different sorts of things to look out for in a piano, whether you're looking at it online or whether you're going to a friend's house and they happen to say, oh, we've got a piano, you can have ours if you want, or whether you're going into sort of the top London showrooms and thinking of spending £100,000 on a concert grand piano.
Rupert, what should we be asking as parents coming in? What's your advice? What should the first questions be when you're starting that journey?
The first question would be to know the space that you've got to put your piano in. It needs to be somewhere away from heat sources. Now, whether that be radiators, direct sunlight, underfloor heating, an Arga cooker on the other side of the wall, anything that can cause an area of a room to fluctuate in temperature. Pianos are made of wood and they're made of metal, and changes in temperature are a piano's enemy. So trying to find an area which is big enough, basically you need a floor space about 5 foot by 2 foot. Oh, no, in old money, so I don't know what that is in meters, but the floor space is really what you're needing to make sure you've got, and it's away from a radiator, a good meter or so away from a radiator. That would be your first thing. Just make sure you've got space for one. Also, access to your house is quite important. We have had problems with getting a traditional larger piano into some flats, some modern homes, where there's some tight twists and turns and changes of level all going on at the same time. So that's something to consider all the time. And lifts, measure the size of the lift. It needs to be sort of at least a 4-person lift. Other things to look out for are obviously what you want it to look like. Probably 9 out of 10 pianos we sell new these days are in the black shiny finish. There's a lot of belief that an old piano is better than a new piano, which as a piano technician, as a piano tuner, I wholeheartedly disagree with, simply because the older pianos were often built for an era that we don't live in these days. They were built when we didn't have central heating, when we didn't have double glazing, and the glues that hold the old pianos together are failing. And now they might still be around physically, but to use them as a fine musical instrument is usually beyond them. And setting a budget, as I say, you can set anything between sort of virtually nothing up to many, many thousands of pounds. But bear in mind that any piano that you might choose to buy, there's delivery costs, tuning costs, all built into it. If you see them in the shop, if you see a piano in a shop for £500 or £600, £300 or so of that is going to be the delivery and the tuning cost. When you see a piano for free on eBay or Facebook Marketplace, it won't be free. You still have to pay for transport and tuning costs, and you'll still be paying about £300. And you've got the ultimate gamble as having paid out your £300 plus tuning costs to then call me out to come and tune it and find that it is untunable, of which many, many, many 50, 80, 100-year-old pianos are just untunable.
Really?
So just be careful when looking at it. It's a bit like looking around at old cars. You wouldn't expect to be able to pick up an old car and take it, sail it through an MOT. It's just not going to happen. Same with old pianos. So just be realistic. When you sort of think about a piano, it is a complicated machine, as many moving parts as a car's engine, and yet it's made out of wood, it's made out of felt, it's made out of leather. To expect that bit of wood, tiny little bits of wood, tiny little bits of leather, to expect them to still be working perfectly after 50 years or 60 years or 100 years is just unreasonable. And the cost of rebuilding them is very difficult to justify. It would only make sense if it was a family piano, which you've inherited and you've got fond memories of grandparents, great-grandparents playing it. Would you even be able to justify trying to spend thousands of pounds to rebuild a piano, which is what most of the old pianos need these days? So the questions to ask are quite varied, but it's quite difficult to put one question down as the most important, because there are several which you need to be considering. The space you've got for it, the amount you want to spend, what you want it to look like. And also another sort of question to ask yourself is, are you, as a beginner, then don't be fobbed off with somebody saying, oh, it'll be all right for a beginner. Because pianos, as a learner, when you're first starting to play the piano, it is not acceptable to have a piano which some of the notes work a little bit, some of the notes don't work at all, some of the notes work really well. That inconsistency is very off-putting for a learner. So try and avoid anything which is described as ideal for a beginner, because frankly, if they're not good enough for a beginner, they're not good enough for anyone. And it's unfair to expect an old machine to be able to cope with fine playing.
Rupert, is there a third way? Is rental something that happens? Is that something that's possible?
Yes, it is. Yes, we have expanded our rental fleet quite a lot over the last sort of 20 years or so, and that has proved quite popular. We do offer a rental scheme with some of the second-hand pianos. We don't rent out new pianos. We are sort of quite conscious of the fact that if a parent is renting a piano for a child, children can be sort of prone to sort of have accidents and scratch things and throw things at pianos. So we tend to sort of restrict our rental fleet to good quality, modern, second-hand pianos, which are going to be reliable musical instruments, not necessarily the prettiest piece of furniture, but good workhorse pianos that'll see the child through the first 6 months or year or 2 years of learning, to give the parents a chance to assess whether their child is going to really be committed to it. Because if they're not, you don't want to spend £3,000 or £4,000 on a piano and then find it's not being used 2 months later, or the child changes their mind and want to play saxophone instead or do something completely different. So yes, the rental scheme is quite popular.
And Rupert, you've mentioned about the different options about renting it, and you've talked about, you know, these free pianos and how you might come about one of those.
Yeah.
Have you got any stories that you might want to share? Any examples of those when things perhaps have gone well or where things perhaps haven't gone well?
There have been numerous horror stories of pianos which have passed through sort of my hands, which I've sort of been asked to go and tune from people who have been gifted this bargain of a free piano from a friend or a neighbor, or picked it up for free off Facebook Marketplace and assume it's an absolute bargain and I will be called out. And yes, I've come across pianos with a mouse nest in the bottom, still with mice in it. I've come across pianos where you've opened the lid and moth flies out of the top, the clothes moth, the felt moth. It's been munching away and eating away at all the materials inside the piano, undisturbed for years and years and years. And then a piano tuner comes along and opens it up to sort of see what's going on inside, and this wave of moth flies out at you, and you think, oh, you know, this is going to be trouble. Because moth love felt pianos, because the felt is so soft and tasty. They will be straight in there as soon as there's any moth in the house. It will make a sort of a beeline for the piano. So definitely avoid anything which has got moth in it. Mildew is another one. I've come across pianos where, not necessarily particularly damp houses, but where a piano has been sat in an unventilated space. And I've come across this on even relatively modern pianos. There are a piano just sort of 20, 25 years old. I opened it all up and there's this white, fluffy sort of fungus growing over all of the wood and the sort of felt parts. And you just don't want to go near them. There was another one I came across on the subject of moth, where back in the 50s and 60s, people didn't hesitate to throw this moth powder all over their pianos. Now, back in the 50s and 60s, DDT was a really sort of big sort of pesticide used in all sorts of sort of places, but DDT was quite prevalent in old moth powder. And it's a lethal sort of thing to breathe in. So you just have to walk away when you come across anything that looks as though it might be old moth powder scattered around inside your piano. There's also, I mean, obviously pianos that have been dropped. You can see there's sort of cracks in the frame, cracks in soundboards, as well as damage to casework. Again, a very modern piano I was asked to go and look at, which had obviously been dropped and the lid had come off. It was a modern black polyester one, but it is really badly damaged. And to re-polyester a piano is thousands of pounds worth of work. And there comes a point where you just have to sort of say, well, you just can't do it economically. And the piano is scrap and you have to sort of really sort of be brave and walk away from it. But there's also been some beautiful ones. I have come across ones where people have sort of come across pianos on eBay and sort of picked them up relatively cheaply, pianos which I'm actually quite jealous of because they're beautiful, beautiful sort of examples of both modern pianos. I mean, to be honest, unless it's been dropped, you can't really go wrong with a piano that's less than 5 or 10 years old. I mean, they are unlikely to have been worn out. They're unlikely to have been anywhere too hostile, sort of temperature-wise, for long enough to have caused major damage. And unless they obviously have been flooded or sort of obvious or damaged, then they're usually okay. But I did see quite recently a beautifully restored Steinway upright, which people have bought online, and it was fabulous. It was really nicely rebuilt, which is very unusual because, as I say, rebuilding is so expensive. People wouldn't normally rebuild a piano and then sell it because they would have landed themselves a sort of five-figure rebuild sort of a bill.
Rupert, you've mentioned there about temperature. One of the things we've been thinking about as well are these street pianos that are popping up. What's your thoughts on that as a tuner? I imagine that must be a nightmare.
It really is. But I think people's expectations of a street piano are a lot lower than if they're in your home. I do tune the Hitchin Street Piano when they've got the new season coming along. And in fact, I'm booked in to do it. And a couple of days before World Piano Day, I will be tuning that one. But they do keep their piano in a fairly well-temperate room. And they just wheel it out for the days which it's going to be on the street, which is okay. It's not ideal. Ideally, a piano would never be moved at all. But it's better than leaving it out on the street. But obviously, the St. Pancras pianos and the other street pianos, I hope somebody is in charge of each of them, because you do need constant sort of tinkering with them. Not only is it the tuning, but all the wood, delicate wood of the keys, the delicate wood of the hammers and the parts of the action. With any temperature change, it moves around, it warps, it twists, it starts to rub against its neighboring note, and you then get sticky notes. There's all sorts of issues with sort of street pianos, but the street piano tends to be a fairly basic piano in the first place, which are usually pretty tough and robust. They're not the finest musical instruments.
Rupert, I have so enjoyed hearing your expertise. It's brilliant to just understand a little bit more about the pitfalls and some of the things to look out for, and to know where we might come to talk to somebody so knowledgeable and find out a bit more for parents perhaps that are interested in buying a piano or even renting a piano, or they're just beginning at the start of lessons and thinking about what the consequences of those lessons may end up being. So it's really brilliant to talk to you. Thank you so much for your time. Can you just tell us, if we want to visit you, or we, our listeners might want to just find out a little bit more, how can they do that?
We're in Middle of Hitchin in Tilehouse Street, but the website is richardreasonpianos.co.uk, where you'll find all our information, lots of information about us, who we are, where we are, and there's a relatively up-to-date stock list on there as well. So please have a look at that, or just come and visit us. We're always open on Saturdays. The rest of the week, I'm usually out and about tuning. So it's by appointment only during the week, but we're always here on Saturdays.
Oh, that's super. Well, it's been so informative. Thank you so much, Rupert. And just to be able to have a little snapshot of obviously your great expertise and your knowledge of this subject is just superb. So I really appreciate you joining us.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Joining me is British artist Luke Jerram. Based in Bristol and working internationally for 25 years, Luke's the founder of Play Me, I'm Yours, which has seen over 2,000 pianos installed in over 70 cities across the globe. Luke, you're very welcome to the Parents Show on Mix 92.6.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Luke, can you just start off maybe by telling us a little bit about yourself as an artist and your work with the Play Me, I'm Yours project?
Yeah, so yeah, based in Bristol, I make installation artworks. I've been doing this for over 25 years now. And some of the artworks I create involve arts and science and engineering, and others involve a degree of sort of public participation and a bit more sort of playful. And many years ago, I had a project actually that involved playing music from hot air balloons that would fly over your house at 6 a.m. to affect your dreams. And there's a project called the Sky Orchestra. So, and in fact, we tried to do this with the Birmingham Symphony Orchestra in the hot air balloons. And we tried to fly over Birmingham playing music down into people's bedrooms from the sky. But the problem was, when we all turned up, it was too windy. It was too windy to perform. So it was a bit of a disaster. And we had to pay all the musicians for turning up. And they were on music union rates. So we had to pay them. We had to pay all the pilots, all these 7 hot air balloon crews for turning up. And so we'd blown half the budget, basically. And the problem was, we'd promised Birmingham City Council that we would reach an audience of 100,000 people with a large-scale artwork across Birmingham City. And we had nothing to show for it. So it was a complete disaster. And luckily, the curator of the festival said, well, actually, could you come up with another idea to reach 100,000 people across the city? And that's where the idea for the Play Me, I'm Yours street piano project came from. So we went ahead and we installed, 15 pianos across Birmingham for people to play. And it was very successful.
I absolutely love that idea of a hot air balloon drifting over my house and waking me up with some, or affecting my dreams in some hopefully really positive way. I think that's such a beautiful concept. But what an amazing change of tact, I suppose, and something that's obviously really resonated with so many people to actually be able to install these pianos. And how did you get the pianos, Luke?
Well, a piano used to be the main form of entertainment for people before the radio, before TV, before the internet, so 100, 150 years ago. So there is these sort of secondhand pianos all across the country. People don't really know what to do with. And they were all sort of donated to the project. And they were decorated by local artists. And then we would distribute them, install them across the city. So we put them in bus stations and train stations and markets and all sorts of interesting places. And then the idea is that anyone can sit down and play those pianos as a way of sharing their creativity with one another and sort of animating the streets with music. It works really well. And in fact, the Play Me, I'm Yours, the street piano project, was far more successful than the Sky Orchestra ever was. And we went on to install 2,000 pianos in the end in about 70 cities all around the world, from Hong Kong to Los Angeles to London to Sydney. It became, quite a phenomenon.
And it's not just about the music, though. You've mentioned there about the artists as well. So what brief did you give your artists that were actually painting these pianos?
Yeah, so we often invite artists to come along and paint them as a way of making them more attractive, more playable. There's something about classical piano that can be quite daunting, I think, and quite imposing. They have a certain weight to them, don't they? So by decorating in different colours and patterns and that sort of thing, it would just make them more approachable. And each of the pianos would have the words "Play Me, I'm Yours" over the front of it. And the project really took off to the extent that it was also copied. So other people started putting pianos in cities and train stations all around the world. And now it's sort of become part of city culture. You see them in train stations, in airports, all around the world now as a consequence of this project. So I feel like a sort of proud father.
Yes, I was going to ask if you do feel very proud. I mean, for my own child, we have seen these pianos, played these pianos in public spaces as well. And it's sort of almost normalised. But for my generation, it was such a kind of eye opener to see these pianos in a public space and people just being able to access them any time of day. How do you finance all of that? Did you have to maintain the pianos as well?
Yeah, so often it would be festivals that would commission this project, and they would deliver the project locally with our team sort of advising on how to do it. And then, as a part of the project, the pianos would be tuned once every week or two. So a local piano tuner would go around tuning them all. And each piano has a cover to protect from the rain as well. But generally, we try to put them out so that they're not exposed to the weather and the rain. And they would sort of stay there generally for 2 or 3 weeks for the duration of a festival. And then afterwards, the pianos would be donated. So they might go to a school or a community centre or something like that afterwards.
How fantastic. And you must feel, I guess, if you're looking around, you're walking through a train station, you see somebody maybe playing a piano as you're passing. Does that kind of fill your heart with a little bit of joy that you think I was part of that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I was also, you know, it's the lovely stories that emerge out of it. So, you know, we've had homeless people who've been discovered playing pianos and given jobs, you know, playing piano in the local restaurant. Or we've had musicians who've been given recording contracts where they've been discovered. And then it's even led to that Channel 4 TV competition called The Piano. So yeah, a good artwork will have all these unusual, unexpected outcomes. When we first started putting pianos across London, we had to have a music license that was about an inch thick for every single piano. And at that point, yeah, you had to have a music license to put a piano in a pub or any sort of live music. You had to have a license. And as a consequence of this project, they actually ended up changing the laws. So I remember having my lunch on a working from home and turning on the TV, and they suddenly started talking about Play Me I'm Yours in the House of Lords. It was really interesting. So yeah, all sorts of unusual outcomes. And then obviously there's lots of celebrities, you know, from Elton John to Jamie Cullum and John Legend, who've used the street pianos project as a way of sort of promoting their latest album or something like that.
And I'm sure some of our listeners might have seen the YouTube clips as well of people just sitting down completely unexpected, you know, sometimes the most unlikely looking person sitting down at a piano who you just wouldn't expect to perform to such a degree, you know, these really beautiful performances that some of us have heard. And you mentioned The Piano, the Channel 4 programme as well with Claudia Winkleman. I mean, I guess that wouldn't have been on your horizon when you first started this in Birmingham. I guess you wouldn't have imagined that it could have gone quite so viral as it's become.
No, I had no idea. In fact, there was a girl playing a piano in Liverpool Street Station, and a guy came up to her and they gave each other piano lessons and realized they were on the same commute home. So they ended up having lessons, piano lessons, giving each other piano lessons every day. And after a few weeks, they fell in love, and actually they got married as a consequence of the project. And they had the street piano at their wedding, which was very nice. So the street piano project has led to several marriages around the world as well. I've been invited to a few weddings. It's been quite fun.
Oh, look, you're melting my heart. This is just beautiful. I mean, some of these stories and the reach that this project's clearly had, the lives that it's touched, is just outstanding. What sort of challenges? You mentioned about the music license being one. Were there any other practical challenges, like, you know, any objections to getting permits to get into these places or anything that you came across that was difficult?
Yeah, there's often difficulties. It's interesting. You can put a piano on the street and then it's sort of, that's city council territory. Whereas if you move it 1 meter slightly towards a shop, you know, then suddenly that's something you've got to get permission from the shop owner instead. So it's interesting. There's sort of, the city is divided into these public versus private spaces. But yeah, all sorts of challenges. I mean, here in Bristol, we put a piano in a park and someone set fire to it, which was a real shame. The problem was the piano was strapped to a lamppost. All the cabling inside the lamppost melted, and that was feeding electricity to a pump that was aerating a pond. So all the fish died. It's just a complete disaster. Oh. So, I mean, it is the nature of public art, is that, you know, there's always a percentage of people who don't know what to do with it. And it's the same with anything in the public domain, whether it's a lamppost or a bus shelter or a telephone box. You know, there's a percentage of the population who just want to smash stuff up after a few drinks. So, you know, we had a few incidents. We had a piano again in Bristol, and at the end of the project, it suddenly vanished. And we went to go and work out where it was. And there were these sort of scrape marks along the pavement. And then scrape marks of this piano all the way up a hill through a park and then along a road and then into someone's house. We just followed it and knocked on the door, and these sort of two sheepish students came along, and they'd admitted that, you know, after a few beers, they'd stolen the piano. But we said, well, you can have it. You're obviously so desperate to have it. And what was quite nice is they'd waited until the very end of the project in order to steal the piano rather than stealing it right at the beginning. So that was quite fun. There's something quite Bristol about that.
Oh, gosh. And so they kept it.
So this have kept it, which is fine. but yeah, that project did take me all around the world. But yeah, but I make all sorts of different artworks now. and have about 100 exhibitions each year with my great team here in Bristol. So, and some projects get presented once or twice and others really take off, like the street piano project.
And I suppose there is that human connection. You know, you're bringing music and art and beauty, making this so accessible. It's always there. I speak as an art graduate myself, you know, and appreciate that sometimes we have to look for these things, but to have something that's so accessible, it's just there for us, right? You know, it's making it so easy for people to just in their day make that little connection.
Yeah, I think the reason why the project took off is it wasn't about my creativity. It was about providing a space for other people to be creative, and also a way of sort of strangers connecting over a piano, meeting one another. So it's that sort of human connection that gave the project its power. And so, yeah, I tried to make more artworks like that.
And why do you think the piano is considered such a foundational instrument in actually learning music? You know, that's something that I think anybody that's had an interest in music or a career in music at some point, you know, you've had a little play. Why do you think it's so foundational?
Yeah, that's the nice thing about a piano. Even if you've had no training in it, you sit there and with, you know, find the notes. It's not like trying to play violin or the bagpipes, you know, where you're just getting a decent sound out of it is a problem. If you know a tune, you can more or less find those notes with your hand. Also, the nice thing is with a piano is you can have one, two or four people playing it at the same time, you know, which is quite a nice thing to do. And it's a piece of furniture that people can stand around and gather around as well. So that there's something about that as well that's very universal. Yeah, and accessible, I suppose.
Yes, and you're right. It's a sort of point of connection physically as well, and something that's got a visual impact. For you, what's the most rewarding part of this personally? You know, you've told us about some of the stories about marriages and different things, but for you personally, what's your kind of biggest special takeaway from this project?
I think it's the power of public art to connect with everyone in society. And the power of music as well to affect change and bring people together. I think that's what I learned out of it. Yeah, it was very nice. We put a piano in the train station in Sao Paulo, and we came across a mother and a daughter. And it turns out the mother had worked as a cleaner for 4 years to send her daughter to piano lessons on the other side of the city. But a piano in Sao Paulo cost like a year's wage. So she never actually heard her daughter play the piano before. And the daughter sat down and played beautiful piano for her mother and burst into tears. It was very, very nice. And ever since then, they've put pianos in all the train stations around Sao Paulo for the last 10 years or so. So, yeah, there's all these lovely little stories that emerged out of it. We put a piano in Cleveland, and there was a guy outside. We put it outside the police station. We thought, the police would keep an eye on it as well. But there was a guy who turned up, and he just played one note continually for hour upon hour. And in the end, they got so annoyed by this in the local police station with the sound of it going through the window that they went out and said, what on earth are you doing? And it turns out he was a wanted felon. So they were able to arrest him.
My word. Very unexpected twists and turns to this to this project. My goodness. Look, what's next for you? You know, what are you working on at the moment? What should we be looking out for?
Well, I've been touring my Moons and Earth artworks around the world. They're often in cathedrals and museums. And these artworks are continually to tour. I'm working on a sort of floating version of the sun at the moment, which is quite nice. But lots of new projects that I'm developing and presenting in cities all around the country. Lots of people know the artwork, but they don't know it's by the same artist because my practice is rather diverse. I do a whole range of different things. So yeah, if you go to lukejeremy.com, you can see what I'm up to.
Look, were you responsible for the one recently in St. Albans Cathedral?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
lots of our listeners will be familiar with that. I'm sure that was very popular.
Good. Yeah. No, again, these act as a sort of a giant replicas of the moon, and they act as a venue for events to take place beneath them as well. So again, it's a way of sort of giving space for other people to be creative, but also act as an installation in their own right as well.
So look, can you tell us again, if people want to see your work, maybe on social media or they want to visit the website, can you give us the details again of how they can find out what you're up to?
Yeah, if they go to, on Instagram, it's Luke Jerram Artist, or on the internet, they can go to lukejerram.com and they can see all the artworks that are touring currently and the exhibitions that people can go and find. to check out.
Look, I've really enjoyed speaking to you and learning more about the project, learning about these fantastic stories and these real human connection points, these beautiful moments that have come about as a result of your work and your creativity. So thank you so much for sharing that with us today.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Luke.
The Parents Show on Mix 92.6, sponsored by Raiden Solicitors, award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.